You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. WynnBET is now live in Colorado, Indiana, Tennessee, Virginia, Arizona, Louisiana, and now in New York. From boosted parlays to in-game odds on every major sport, WynnBET has what you need to win. Sign up today and bet $10 to get $200 in free bets. Download the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com and start winning today. We're also brought to you by PropSwap, America's marketplace to buy and sell sports bets. Use promo code SGP on your first deposit to receive up to $500 in bonus cash. Head on over to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app today. And finally, we're brought to you by StableDuel. StableDuel is horse racing daily fantasy sports app where you can play free and paid games for real cash prizes. You can win as much as $15,000 with just one entry. Head on over to StableDuel.com to get started today. And speaking of apps, don't forget to download the SGPN app and enter the free Super Bowl props contest for your chance to win $100,000. Download the SGPN app wherever it is you download apps.
Howdy ho, Degenerinos, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, the Mighty Sports Gambling Podcast Network. We're up to episode 116 already, and this one, of course, has to go out to all the lovers out there. Tomorrow being the day of love, this goes out to all of you. I would be your host of this year's program, King Jeff Fox. I rule the roost here, even with mediocre picks. I'm still the king, so I get to talk first. Unless you count the ads that Gumby reads at the starting, but nonetheless, thanks for coming to the podcast. Hopefully you're listening to us on our direct feed, the MMA Gambling Podcast feed. If you are, throw up a review, that would be amazing, because the NBA podcast guys are getting all the reviews and just making the rest of us look pretty bad. So even if you don't like the show, just give us a good review. Come on, be a buddy. But you're going to like the show because our banter off the hook, our picks, usually pretty good. My co-host usually can spin things to make it look like we gave you some good picks, even if we lost money for you. So that's the main thing. Let's bring him in now because I'm guessing my intros drive a lot of people away on the podcast, despite me being the king. What can I tell you about my co-host? He laughs sometimes, which is good. He apparently, I just found this out a few minutes ago, he has a garage. Well, the rest of us have car holes. big fancy man. You may know him as Man Mountain Gumby. He's the one, the only, Daniel Gumby Vreeland.
First of all, great Simpsons reference. That's Mo, right? Correct?
It is Mo, the Counterfeit Jeans episode.
And second of all, I don't have to spin picks right this week because – if I'm not mistaken, we both had a pretty good day in picking the whole card. Awful. And at least I had a good day with my recommended plays.
That's what we are here to offer you. A pretty good day, not awful, right?
Mine I think is more than – I think mine is more than pretty good, if I'm not mistaken.
You're mediocre.
I think with the recommended plays, I think my return on investment right around 40%, which if you're getting 40% returns on your bets, which I think is what I'm getting on the year right now, you should be pretty happy.
We'll get into all that. But you basically, I was reminded again last night by a listener. It's still always a shock when people reach out and say they love the show because who would listen to this? But regardless, people actually listen, which is nice. Thank you. But he also mentioned how sounds like he's just basically a casual fan, but a hardcore degen, like everyone listening. And he is talking about how much money he made off Dana White Contender Series. So you are still living off that epic run you had last fall?
Yeah, it was like September to November, I want to say it was.
you're still living off of that. So people are still bowing, talk about how much money you made them, and that's why they love the show. So I guess that's why I keep you around.
Well, if they've been trailing my picks for the last 3 weeks, I'm pretty sure we've had profitable recommended plays 3 weeks in a row.
Yep, very, very true. Very true. Yeah, we're doing good with the recommended plays. That's Dan's new spin. It's all about the recommended plays.
The things that you would actually bet on seem to be the things that we...
No, people are supposed to bet on everything, remember? We're talking about the gens here. If you go in the Slack during fight night, it's just like nonstop. Okay, I'm going to bet on this now. I'm going to bet on this now. Okay, I lost that bet, so I'm going to throw money on this one. It's just constant action from the gens.
And we appreciate that. If it's working for you, God bless you. Yep. But as we've noted, trying to bet the exact same amount of money on every single fight straight up on the money lines is maybe not the best way to profit in the long term.
No, probably not. Let's get into UFC 271 in a sec. Before I do the ad reads, a production meeting on air, as we like to do. Are we going to drop this episode before the big game tonight, the American Grey Cup?
The American Grey Cup.
As you called it.
Yeah. I will make sure that the editing team in all of their glory gets on it as soon as we're done recording. And I will say unabashedly, it will be in the listeners' ears before the Super Bowl.
In that case.
Can I say Super Bowl? Is this one of those... I know ads aren't allowed to say Super Bowl. Do I have to say big game?
I'm not sure. Yeah, it's true. Some of the ads I read say Super Bowl, some say big games. So I guess, yeah. We can call it the American Grey Cup, which is what we can. Yeah, I don't think there's anything against that.
No, nobody's ever done that before in their whole life. So.
Well, one of the sponsors that has Super Bowl in their title is the amazing WynnBET. WynnBET is now live in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee. No, wait a minute. Tennessee's not the new one. We'll keep going. Virginia, Louisiana, that's a new one. And New York, that's another new one. We're bringing the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas to online sports betting and casino play, from boosted same-game parlays to live in-game odds on every major sport. WynnBET has what you need to win. Don't forget about all the props that will be available on WynnBET for the Super Bowl. See, they say Super Bowl here. The best part, you can build your own bet to create a prop-focused same-game parlay for the big game. Be on the lookout for the WynnBET Win Hour each Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern time. During WynnBET Win Hour, marquee games of the week will have better odds on WynnBET, giving you a larger payout opportunity. Sign up today, don't delay, to receive a special offer. Bet $10, win $200. Download BetWin, download the WynnBET app now, or visit winbet.com to start winning. All right, Dan's going to pick one of these build-your-own parlays that they have for the big games tonight, since I haven't been following American-Canadian football, I guess we'll call it.
American-Canadian?
Yep. All right.
I feel like Canadian football is a very – correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't watch Canadian football, so before we get into –
Neither do I.
Yeah. I'm assuming the field is, like, slightly different, right?
It's bigger. I think it's 10 yards bigger, maybe. 5 yards bigger.
Okay.
I think is what it is.
Like a little bit wider. Like,
and I think it's wider too. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, do you want me to use one of the build your own bets from our?
Do you have them in front of you, or do you need me?
Yeah,
to
I have them in front of me. I have. Whatever you're talking about, I always have in front of me. So yeah, like
in school when you have to read along with the teacher. Yes. All right. Which one do you like best of those bets that they suggested here?
That they suggested, or
just do you see the? Okay, sorry. They have four build your own bet suggestions here.
Oh, I'll
read them to you, and you can pick
one. Don't read them to me.
All right,
I have. All right. So I like. Let's go with of those ones.
They have a +400, a +650, a +1400, and a +4000.
I'm gonna
see what level of degen.
I'm gonna go. The second level of DGEN. I'm going to say I like the one that they give us here. I was going to build my own on the air, which would have been wild too. But I'll go with the ones they got me here. I'll like Joe Burrow with at least 3 touchdowns. Joe Mixon with at least 70 rushing yards. And an anytime touchdown for Ja'Marr Chase. Because, hey, if Joe Burrow is throwing at least 3 touchdowns, goddamn, Ja'Marr Chase better catch one of them. So I'm actually pretty in on the Bengals this time. So that's an all Bengals one. So I like that one. 650.
+650. There you go. Now, remember, all this is important stuff, people. Offer subject to change terms and conditions at winbet.com. Must be 21 or older to and present in the state where play through WinBet is available. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. And guess who else is back? Manscaped. Can they get a round of applause, everyone? Yay. No round of applause.
Did you want me to clap into
it? Yeah, clap, please. You're my folio artist, I believe they're called. Today, I'm excited to announce Manscaped launched their Ultra Premium Collection. Believe it or not, it's for your not-so-private parts. I believe it. I'm talking about a leveled-up hygiene routine with your favorite manly scent. This is an all-in-one skin and hair care kit for the everyday man and covers you from head to toe, literally. Manscaped is trusted below the waist. Now trust them with the rest. Join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code SGP. Of course, we all know how essential the Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0 is for the precise trim below the waist. Their advanced skin-safe technology reduces cuts to your most delicate areas. But now you can enhance your perfect grooming routine with their ultra-premium collection. This package includes, get ready, Manscaped Premium Deodorant. Not for your balls, for your stanky armpits. This deodorant dries clear, it's aluminum-free, and smells like their signature scent. Hydrating body moisturizer. Have tattoos or issues with dry skin? It's designed to keep skin feeling clean, smooth, and smelling fresh. Body wash to lather you up with their infused aloe vera and sea salt shower gel. 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner to clean your scalp with an easy one-step. Plus, a free gift, a 3-pack set of lip balm that's made with ingredients such as vitamin E, peppermint, and eucalyptus oil to keep those chappers feeling moist. That's 4 products plus a gift inside the Ultra Premium Collection. What a score. All of these products are cruelty-free, paraben-free, vegan-friendly, and dye-free. The best ingredients with zero compromise. I'd recommend using the products in this order. Listen, everyone, get out a pen and paper if people write with manually nowadays. Hop in the shower and scrub a dub-dub that body with Manscaped Body Wash. Number 2, lather your hair up with the 2-in-1 shampoo conditioner to keep your noggin toggin. Toggin. What does toggin mean, Dan? Who wrote this? Damn it, who wrote this ad read? Keep your noggin toggin. All right, I think it's a good thing. Toggin?
Sounds good.
Sure. I asked. I wasn't sure if it was a millennial thing, so that's why I have to ask if toggin's a thing.
If it is, I'm behind on my my generational times.
All right, what were we up to? Number 3 we're up to, dry off and spray on the hydrating body moisturizer to reinvigorate dry skin. Number 4, put on the Manscaped deodorant for obvious reasons. Number 5, pop that Manscaped lip balm on. No one is out here kissing chapped up lips. Getting dressed after is optional. Wear one great scent all day long. Get the Ultra Premium Collection hot off the shelves. Here's what you got to do. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code SGP at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code SGP at manscaped.com. The power of attraction is now in a bottle thanks to Manscaped. All right. UFC 271 went down last night in the Toyota Center in Houston, Texas. I can get you some more info. I'm going to my site because I'm where I have it, MMA-manifesto.com, under the fighter salaries, attendance, that article. The attendance was 70,872. Gate was $4,300,000. I think I read it was the biggest gate in Toyota Center history or something like that. And UFC has all the biggest gates there. So they are bringing in the dough to pay Israel Adesanya his new contract, which I'm sure is still paying him pennies of what he's worth. All right. The main event was a rematch, Israel Adesanya versus Robert Whittaker, part 2. Adesanya won, as both of us predicted. We got, what do we get on that? Minus 290. Unanimous decision, 48-47, 48-47, 49-46 on the night with a lot of wacky decisions. This one, I think they pretty much nailed it. I probably had it either 3-2 or 4-1, so it sounds about right to me.
Yeah, except for, so, you know, first of all, they did get it right because every single judge gave it to Israel Adesanya. I don't know about you, the way I scored 1-2-3 for Izzy,
right.
4 kind of up in the air. I think I even gave 4 to Izzy, as long as I'm being honest, and then 5 definitely to Whittaker. So that's how
too,
I had
probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and if you look at the first two judges, the ones who went 48-47, they went 1-2-3 Izzy, 4-5 to Whittaker, which so they were in perfect agreement. the third judge, who, by the way, was referee Mike Beltran, which is a bizarre, gave four rounds to Izzy. So I was like, oh, he went 1, 2, 3, 4. Do you know what round he gave Whitaker? 2. He gave Whitaker 2.
Really?
He gave
Izzy.
He did
better in 2 than 1, but.
He gave Izzy 5.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense at all.
The most perplexing part of that scorecard, right? Because, like, for me, 1 and 5, you can't mix up, right? Like, 1 was Izzy, right. 5 was Whitaker, and that's for sure. And then, like, you know, you could really try to spin 2, 3, and 4 if you really wanted to in either direction. It's stupid to go Whitaker on all of them because I think Izzy was doing the. You know, Whitaker's leg was, you know, badly mangled by the end of it. You know, I would be surprised if he's walking upright very well today. So, you know, I think Izzy clearly won at least 2 of those, but, like, you could spin them if you really wanted. T5 is just, man, that's a bad scorecard, and I have no idea why he would be a judge after all of that. And we're definitely going to talk more about judging later, but nevertheless, like, almost exactly the pride of Adesanya. Like, he stuffed some takedowns. When he didn't stuff them, he was right back to his feet in no time. He's obviously the better striker. He went in with a smart game plan. He was safer the second time he fought Whitaker. You know, like, less. Whitaker was less aggressive, so it was, like, maybe a less action-packed fight, but exactly what I thought Izzy was going to do. And so, props to him.
Yeah, they both pretty much fought a better fight. Whitaker pretty much fought the way he should have fought in the first fight, but, you know, it's still not enough to beat Adesanya. It reminded me, actually, of the olden days of actually the middleweight division. Whitaker playing the role of Rich Franklin, where he was clearly the class of the division, and then in comes this enigma, Anderson Silva / Israel Adesanya, and it changes everything, and no one is on that level. That's what it reminded me of watching that last night.
Yeah, I will say this, and I mean absolutely no offense to Rich Franklin when I say this, too, because I do enjoy watching Rich Franklin. I like Rich Franklin quite a bit. The gap between Robert Whittaker and Israel Adesanya is a lot smaller than the gap between Anderson Silva and Rich Franklin was. Like, Silva showed up, and he was, like, this untouchable, absolute beast who is head and shoulders better than everybody. And I do think Izzy is head and shoulders better than everybody not named Robert Whittaker. And I think he's a head, you know, better than Whittaker. But Whittaker is a lot closer than I think. I mean, like, he made that a fight in a couple of spots last night. Not enough to win him, but enough that, like, you know, a couple of people with the worst scorecards in history could at least argue it. Whereas, like, you know, when Silva fought Franklin, there's no arguing how that fight ends, right? Like, it's pretty one-sided. By the way, did you happen to look at the media scorecards for Whitaker versus Adesanya on MMA decisions?
Yes, a couple of your friends at SureDog had it for Whitaker, correct?
Yeah, there were 4 total media members who had it for Whitaker, and 2 of them were on SureDog, which is so funny to me. It's just, it's comical how bad they are time in and time again. One of them had 4 rounds for Whitaker.
It's inexcusable, Dan, but at least they actually weren't judging.
Which we'll get into in a second. Yeah, we'll get into it in a second.
I was going to ask you what's next for Izzy, but we may actually answer that in a couple of fights.
It's like mostly booked. If you look on Twitter, Dana seems to have said it. Izzy wants it. The contender wants it. We can just get this out of the way. It's Jared Cannonier and it's June. For those wondering, it looks like they're fighting. They're both happy with fighting in June. They're both healthy, and it looks like it's happening.
Yeah, I meant we will talk about it when we get to that Cannonier fight. But if you want to jump the gun, go right ahead. And
I do want to jump the gun.
And let the cat out of the bag. You're very excited about it, aren't you?
I am a little bit, because Izzy has kind of gotten to the point, sort of like Kamaru Usman, where it feels like all of the guys on top, it's just like a rerun of past fights. Yeah. And you know, with Usman, we were down to see Colby, the second Colby fight, right? Less so with the second Masvidal fight, but the second Colby fight almost felt like it needed to happen because the first one was close. And Colby debated the stoppage, but that's just stupid. And then the second one, obviously, Kamara wins again in a race is any doubt. So, like, this Whitaker fight was kind of that, right? The 1B of the division needed his second shot. But, like, we didn't need another Masvidal one. We didn't need another Gilbert Burns one. We didn't need another. And I sort of feel that way about Izzy, right? We don't need to see a Paulo Costa rematch. We don't need to see a – I mean, we didn't need to see the Marvin Vettori rematch, but we got it anyway, kind of like Masvidal. And we didn't really need a Derek Brunson rematch, but it seemed like that was probably coming, similar to the way that Gilbert Burns is probably coming for a rematch for Usman. And, like, it just seems like there wasn't a lot of freshness there, and there wasn't a lot of options for me to say, like, oh, yeah, it would be nice if, you know, Izzy could go on a GSP-esque run where he just beats – every different person they throw his way, and it's a slew of different people. And instead, it just winds up being like the same three or four regurgitated contenders. And so for Cannonier to have gone in there and did what he did to Derek Brunson, clearly cement himself as the next best option, it's like it's such a good thing for Izzy's legacy, I think, that he gets that fresh contender that we otherwise would not have seen him against, right? If Derek Brunson wins that, we get to see Derek Brunson too. And then in the meantime, Whitaker probably goes and beats Sean Strickland, and we're talking about, you know, Whitaker 3 being an option. So, yeah, like, this night could not have gone better for Israel Adesanya.
Correct. Before we move off of that, let's map out the rest of his year. So we'll talk more about Cannonier when we break down the Brunson fight. He's fighting him in June, you're penciling him in, or they're penciling that fight in for June. Probably could get another fight in near the end of the year. Who do you have, assuming Izzy wins, who do you have him fighting after that?
Well, I think Strickland is probably the closest right now, but the problem with the way that Strickland fought that last fight is I don't think that lackluster jab, heavy decision over Jack Hermanson is going to be enough to convince people that should be what's next. Like, I don't think he can just wait from February to November on the laurels of that jab-heavy decision. So, like, we're going to have to see him fight somebody. And who that person – that's the tough question, right? Like, what is Paulo Costa doing? Like, that could be an answer, right?
The light heavyweight Paulo Costa?
Yeah, well, I mean, is he a light heavyweight? Is he not a light heavyweight?
He claims he's not, but...
God, and so that's confusing. Obviously, I mean, like, I guess you could run Derek Brunson, but, like, it seems like Brunson's going to need a while to recover.
He said one more fight and he's fine, too, so...
Yeah, so, like, do you want it to be Sean Strickland?
No.
Not
if he wins and then retires, and then we don't have a number one contender. So
right, and then so Cannonier is the other one who's ranked in front of him in the UFC's official rankings. Marvin Vettori is his friend, so probably not going to happen. The only other name that really makes sense and seems to be on a good timeline without like huge question marks like Brunson's health or Paulo Costa's mental health is Robert Whittaker. Coming off of a tough loss like that, it probably makes sense. I actually think he beat Sean Strickland pretty easily. But the whole he lives in Australia, is he going to be able to come back? What would it take for him to get back for a fight? There's just like a lot of questions surrounding that too. And I mean, the only other options are like Strickland fighting behind himself in the division, which doesn't seem right. It's a mess, dude. The honest answer, the best thing they could do for Izzy is just like freaking book Khamzat Chimaev in Sean Strickland. Let's do that.
Half Chimaev. It seems like he wants to fight at welterweight, but he doesn't seem to really care either way. He seems like he would jump back up to middleweight if need be, right?
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, while we still do need fresh contenders for Kamaru Usman down at welterweight, there are options. You know what I mean? Like we don't need to jump right to Khamzat, whereas middleweight needs somebody. You know, the middleweight needs something because, you know, down at welterweight, you could take the winner of Vicente Luque Bilal Muhammad, who's scheduled for their rematch. Leon Edwards is right there. And then after we sort through the three of them, Gilbert Burns may have risen to the rematch you know, level. We got guys like Sean Brady just chilling around. Shavkat Rachmanov is probably a win or two away from, like, a real contender fight. So, like, there are tons of options at welterweight. Kamzat Chimaev could just walk into a title shot at the end of the year in middleweight, and nobody would bat an eyelash, because right now this middleweight division is, it's kind of ugly, man.
Yeah, Sean Strickland beating whoever, beating TVA in June would clear it all up, but the risk of him losing to Whitaker, what are you going to do, Izzy Whitaker 3, or him losing to someone that you don't necessarily want to see have a title shot would be the issue there. So, but we have time for it to all, the dust to settle and things to play out, because it looks like he has the next challenger. I'm already penciling him in to win his next fight. Who knows how that next fight's going to go anyhow. What about Whitaker? Let's talk about him quickly. He used to fight at welterweight, but that was 8 years ago when he was like 23. So and he doesn't look like he could get back down to welterweight. And he's too small for light heavyweight. He was too small for middleweight last night. So what are we doing with him? Is there really hope for him getting a third fight? I don't know. He claims that he won last night and he wants to have a third fight, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. So what do we do with Robert Whittaker? Gatekeeper or what do we do with him?
I mean, if I'm Robert Whittaker and I'm trying to maximize my career and trying to get myself a title again, or the best move for him to be would be to take a fight with Sean Strickland. That literally is the best move, because he's going to kill Sean Strickland. And if he does so in impressive enough fashion, they're going to run out of people to pull out there in front of him. He's basically going to be the Max Holloway of the middleweight division, right? Max Holloway lost twice to Alexander Volkanovski, one of which was a close decision, the other which was pretty clear-cut, at least in my eyes. And, you know, Whitaker, same thing here, pretty close fight one time, got knocked out in the other one. He's way better than everybody in the division. I mean, like, Colby Covington's got the same hope right now. He's just going to keep fighting on in here until they don't have an option but to give him a third one. And I do think the UFC has changed a little bit since, you know, our early days of watching, meaning mine and your early days of watching, where if you lost once to a guy, it was pretty rare to get the rematch, especially if you weren't the champ. And now it's more common to get a rematch. Rematches are much more common because we figure out who's at the top much faster, and they stay at the top for longer. And now I would also say this is it's becoming more common that, like, when that guy is such a good third option, that third fight's right there sometimes, even if you've lost the first two. You know, Max Holloway made it happen. Granted, weird things happened where he's now an alternate for the fight that he dropped out of. But, like, he's going to get a third shot at Alexander Volkanovski, rather. I would not be surprised if before Kamaru Usman retires, we see a third Colby Covington fight. Like, and I don't think it would be shocking to me if I saw Whitaker fight Adesanya again. So that's me, and I'm Robert Whitaker, and I want to get a title shot again. I'm signing to fight Sean Strickland as quickly as I can. Then I'm trying to beat up Marvin Vettori again, or going to go beat Paulo Costa, or, like, you know, just fight those guys. He's going to beat them all. Like, I really do believe he beats them all. So, I mean, I think if I'm his career coach here, that's what I say, because, like you said, he's not moving up or down, and I don't think he's so out of it that we never see him, like, in a contender fight again.
Yeah, no, he looked perfectly fine last night. Looked like clearly the second best guy in the division. All right, speaking of, well, I guess this guy wasn't the second best guy of the division, but he was the gatekeeper of the heavyweight division. Finally got knocked out. It happens occasionally, but Derek Lewis got knocked out pretty bad by an elbow from Tai Tuivasa last night, round 2, minute 40 into it. Very exciting fight with these two. A lot of clinching, but when there was, you know, once they started throwing, then it was pretty exciting, because both these guys can turn the lights out at any moment. Little bittersweet, because I am a Derek Lewis fan, but I like Tai Tuivasa as well. So anyhow, Tai Tuivasa won via elbow after a whole bunch of strikes. It wasn't just the elbow that knocked him out. There was a bunch of things led up to it. And we got ourselves a new young contender in the heavyweight division. We lost this pick. We had Lewis at minus 190. This is one of the underdogs we did not have come through. What was Tui Voss's number at, Dan? It was plus, was he over 200? Plus 150. So it wasn't a massive underdog. So thoughts on this one, Mr. Vreeland?
Yeah, you also failed to mention Lewis by KO as one of your recommended plays.
I was going to go through all the recommended plays at the end. Yeah, I did not do well.
I got to run through them while we're doing this, because just in case people don't make it to the end, I want to make sure they hear that
no,
I did really
they
good.
They have to make it to the end.
Make sure you listen to the end to hear about how good I did. The interesting part about this for me, and I will say, don't get me wrong, the clinch work by Tai Tuivasa, amazing, right? Like, he looks so good. The elbow's in there. I can't believe he knocked Derek Lewis cold with not just the elbow, but like a couple of shots leading up to the elbow, and then a perfectly placed elbow to completely, like, I mean, like, face planted Derek Lewis, which is so crazy. But the most impressive thing that happened to me is when he got up after being on the ground, when he was, like, on all fours, Derek Lewis unloaded five of the biggest punches to the side of Tai Tuivasa's head, and that motherfucker took them and kept getting up. It was insane, man. Like, I don't know how a man takes that many punches from Derek Lewis without defending him and keeps fighting. And not only keeps fighting, he didn't even look wobbly when he got up. I will forever be impressed that he knocked Derek Lewis out and that he looked good doing it. But I will forever be more impressed that he took the best shots that Derek Lewis throws and didn't stop moving.
Yeah, the chin was very, very promising for his chances in a potential title fight. Because I think Lewis hits very close to the level of hardness as the champ, Francis Ngannou. I think he's right almost on Ngannou's level for power. No one else is close to those levels.
Yeah. I agree with you entirely. So, and again, we've got all kinds of questions with Francis Ngannou and if he's going to be back or not. But, like, could this be the worst kind of matchup for him? Like, it's weird to say that, right? Because we're talking about John Jones standing there, and we're talking about Stipe being there for a third fight, and we're talking about, you know, Cyril Gane, who just outstruck him for two rounds before, you know, losing the takedown. But, like, is Tai Tuivasa the worst matchup for Francis Ngannou is the craziest sentence I thought I'd never say in 2022. But it's one coming out of my mouth right now that is at least worth asking, if not a true statement.
Yeah, he would push the pace, and he can take a shot, and he can hit like a truck. So here's what he's done since he kind of – it's still cloudy. I believe he was released briefly in 2020, but then they brought him back for some reason. Since that time, knockout Stefan Struve, TKO Harry Hunsucker. We barely go through a podcast episode without mentioning that amazing name. Knockout Greg Hardy, knockout Augustus Sakai, knockout Derek Lewis. All the last three, all performance of the night bonuses for him. So couldn't have gone much better for Tuivasa, Tuivasa. He's only 28, so he'll be 29 in next month. So sky is still the limit for him, it seems. I want to ask you what we're going to do next with him, but this division is very wonky at this point. We'll do multiple scenarios. Let's assume everything's hunky-dory with Francis Ngannou. He gets a new contract, just like Israel Adesanya, and he's ready to go again, say, summer or whatever. What fight are you booking, if you're booking the division? What's the next title fight?
So I think if that happens, I still don't think that answers enough questions about where we are. Because then can you also tell me if everything's honky-dory with the John Jones situation? Because he's also
Would he be your first pick?
He would be my first pick. John Jones versus – if I'm a promoter and I have the opportunity to make John Jones versus Francis Ngannou, and, like, contracts and money and all that kind of stuff is not in the question at the current moment, that's the fight that's going to draw the most eyes, for sure. Yep. That's the fight that makes the most sense. That's the fight that sells a bazillion pay-per-views because, like, I mean, like, who doesn't want to see, you know, the guy who's knocking everybody out versus the guy who was the greatest light heavyweight, possibly the greatest fighter who ever lived. Like, that's the fight. That being said, I don't think they're going to work out Francis's situation. I don't think John Jones is going to come to a good enough agreement for what he's looking for. I think they're going to try to lowball him, and when he tries to push him one way or the other, they're just going to squeeze him out of the title picture. This is so what I would do if I was booking would be for sure to book Francis and Jones.
Yeah.
What do I predict is going to happen? My prediction for what happens is we see Tai Tuivasa versus Stipe Miocic sometime this summer in an interim title fight.
How wild is that?
That is, again, it's such a weird sentence. But look, I don't think they're going to try to sell a surreal gain again, being that, you know, he won the interim title and didn't win the unified title. So, like, putting him in another interim title fight feels kind of weird. Whereas,
no,
like,
he has some rehab of his image, I think he has to undertake. So, a couple fights, or at least one more fight before he's back in the title picture.
Right, and you know what, too? If you ran Stipe versus Tai Tuivasa, then the UFC can lowball John Jones by being like, you got to go fight Surreal Gain first.
Sure.
And really, you know, that would be a good way to slap John Jones in the face. That'd be a great pay-per-view co-headliner for a fight. You know, like, there's all kinds of things you could say about John Jones versus whoever that is. So I would say it makes tons of sense to do Tai Tuivasa versus Stipe, because, like, Stipe sort of seems like he was like, I thought I deserve a third fight with Francis. I beat him the first time, he beat me the second time. He seems like he's maybe not in it, but if you offered him a title shot, he might be in it. So, like, it would fit for him, and it would seemingly be the thing that would get him, you know, out of the firehouse and back in the cage. I think they're going to try to capitalize on Tai's star power, so to have him in with Stipe would be, like, a really big move. Like, you put that on a poster, people would buy that. So, yeah. I think that's the move. I'm predicting international fight week, we see Tai Tuivasa versus Stipe Miocic for the title, and it's a wild sentence.
It sure is. I was going to ask what's next for Derek Lewis, but it's pretty much the same for Derek Lewis as what we've had. He'll still fight every couple months, probably still beat everyone or almost everyone put in front of him, you know, co-main events of pay-per-views or headlining fight night cards.
Yeah. Yeah.
A bad thing necessarily.
No, I think I agree with that. And I think you probably see him against, you know, Tom Aspinall's and Yair Rosenstroiks and those types of guys all the time. You know, the up and comers after they've won a couple more. You know, you might see him against somebody like Alexander Romanov, who I constantly am lauding as being the next big guy. You know, like, there's lots of options there. Maybe you see him against a resurgent Andrei Arlovsky, who continues to storm his way up the division.
Yes, more on that to come, but no, I don't think we want to see that. You like Arlovsky. You like Arlovsky, do you
he's
not?
He's good at avoiding the big blows.
It's true. So anyhow, we whiffed in this one. Always like to do postmortems on how we whiffed. Underestimated Tuivasa's chin, perhaps. We knew he could crack. We knew he had a pretty good chin, but maybe both of those he could crack a lot harder. I think it comes right down to the chin. He was able to eat everything that was thrown his way. I think that's the main thing, right?
Yeah, because I even said when we were breaking this fight down, I was like, Tai comes to fight, right? Like, that's the thing about Tai Tuivasa. He is not afraid for anybody to be in his face. Greg Hardy got in his face, and he was like, whatever. This guy's only got a puncher's chance, and I'm going to let him punch. Which is crazy, and it was a weird game plan, and it worked. And I just was like, my breakdown said there's no way he was going to take Derek Lewis's best shot, and I thought he was going to have to eat at least one of them. Turns out he ate five of them, he's fine, and he won a fight. So,
yep.
I mean, just wild.
Yes, sirree. All right. Enough of that one. Let me tell you about Stable Duel, and then we'll move on to Another fight that we got wrong. Stable Duo, there are never enough things to gamble on, and the one sport that runs 365 days a year is horse racing. Best part is now there is a new way to play the ponies, especially if you're brand new to the sport. Check out Stable Duo, daily fantasy-style app where you can play free and pay games for real cash prizes. Pick your horses, build your stable, and play against others to move up the leaderboard. Win as much as $15,000 with one entry. Don't know anything about horses? Not to worry. The app gives you clear data on which horses to select to build your best strategy. The app is free to download at StableDuo.com. Multiple games are offered each day with free games weekly at tracks all over the United States. Get in the app, create your account, and start building your stables today. Invite your friends to play against you or play against our stables. You can even follow them in the app, and we can compare our own stats. Download now at StableDuo.com. See how many winners you can pick in your stable. See you in the winner's circle. Play, race, win over at Stable Duo. All right, we briefly touched on this one. Jared Cannonier secured the other performance of the night bonus alongside Tai Tuivasa in his middleweight fight. He knocked out Derek Brunson, second round, 4:29 in. Another KO. This one was multiple elbows on the ground. So we had, and probably we had back-to-back knockouts via elbow. Fight went, I would say, pretty much the way we expected it through the first round. Brunson, Cannonier's wrestling defense did hold up as well as I suspected it was going to, but it still wasn't enough. Brunson still got him down. Brunson was doing okay on the feet as well, but he seemed very intent on getting Cannonier down. And then I think he got a Cannonier hurt him, and or he was getting tired, and he reverted back to the old bad pre-blonde Derek Brunson and started getting very sloppy with his takedown attempts, dipping his head, and got himself lit up on the feet and finished off. Do I have all that correct?
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to give entirely the credit here to Brunson to Cannonier for landing the big blow, because I actually think Brunson tired himself out wrestling.
Yeah.
And I would say if there was a reason why we picked this one wrong, which obviously there is, the reason why we picked this one wrong is we were right that Brunson's wrestling is good enough to wrestle Cannonier, and it was good enough to have him down for a considerable period of time. He looked really good in that first round. You know, everybody gave him the first round by all accounts. I think I even saw somebody give him a 10-8. That was always what we thought. And then just when that second round started, he looked like he was exhausted, which I'm assuming is just what it takes to get Jared Cannonier down regularly. You know, we talked about he does have good takedown defense, especially since coming down to middleweight. And I think that's probably what cooked him here, right, is that it was, you know, just a little bit too much and a little bit too hard for him to regularly get him down. So, I would say I didn't expect him to tire so quickly, because if he could have kept up that same game plan as he did in the first round, he would have won this fight.
Yeah, no, it was very visible how difficult it was for him to get Cannonier down. It took him multiple attempts. Most of them got stuffed. He did get him down a couple times, but even those were a struggle to get it down. Felt bad because this was basically Brunson's last chance, his only chance at possibly securing a title shot, and that will be it for him. He says he's got one more fight in him. As for Cannonier, also, you have to feel good for him. He's really changed his career around, his career trajectory around. Just Google pictures of him when he was a heavyweight or even a light heavyweight. It's a totally different guy. Cardio for days. Excellent wrestling and hits extremely hard.
Yeah. Damn impressive. So, and we talked about it already. It's title shot in June, and I'm looking forward to it.
So what do you think of his chances against Adesanya after what he showed us last night?
I think they're terrible.
but everybody's is, so.
Yeah, for me, for him, I mean, just, like, there isn't the offensive wrestling threat there, right? Cannonier's not going to shoot a takedown on Izzy, and if he is, he's going to fail miserably. You know, he hits hard, but, like, he is not as elusive or nuanced in his striking as Robert Whittaker is, and, you know, Whittaker barely landed on Adesanya. Sometimes he's overly aggressive, which is, I mean,
yeah.
Izzy feeds off of that. Like, it's just a, it's a bad matchup for him. I'd be interested to see what it got posted in, because I think, you know, fresh off of a big knockout win, Cannoneer is probably going to be more highly touted than Izzy coming off of what was kind of a, you know, less visually impressive fight. But with that being said, like, if Izzy was posted under negative 300, I'd be all over it.
We got a line posted, Dan. What do you think it is?
Man, I think, again, I think the numbers for Cannoneer are going to look good, being as how good he looked there. But, obviously Izzy's still the favorite. I'll say negative 250 for Izzy plus, like, 220 for Cannoneer on the comeback.
You nailed it originally when you said minus 300. It's minus 300 for Izzy plus 250 for Cannoneer. So probably the lowest you can see it too, right?
Yeah, I would imagine so. And like I said, I think that that's probably right around the right number, because, like I said, anything under that I would be hitting quickly because it's not going to stay there. But like anything much more than that, like Cannoneer's got more of a chance than negative 300. But like, you know, substantially less of a chance than, you know, he would have been any lower than that. So yeah, I like Izzy in that fight. I think it's pretty clear cut, but it's interesting that, the big knockout didn't do anything extra for Cannoneer's stock.
Well, maybe it did.
Yeah, maybe it did. Fair point. Fair point.
Yep. All right. So we got that one wrong. This is we're coming up to the portion of the card where we made hay, here, as the expression goes. I hit seven straight here. Dan hit eight straight. Starting with Hanato Moicano. Boy, he looked fantastic, against Alexander Hernandez, I totally don't like him now, because he was all whining about his spot on the card being stuck in the prelims. So they put him in the main event. And like I said, main card. And like I said, if you want a better placement in the card, how about you win more than one fight in a row? And no, he lost again. Submission, rear naked choke, Hanato Moicano, second round, minute 23 in. Man, he's I don't know what to make of Moicano. How good can he really be? Because he can crack on the feet, and he's got the, obviously he has the grappling. It's very, he's very intriguing, to say the least.
He's a top 15 lightweight. I firmly believe that he's top 15 lightweight. Yeah, because he's 3-1 at lightweight with three rear naked choke wins, and his only loss is to Rafael Fiziev. So, like, who's about to, or was about to main event before he got his visa denied or slowed down or whatever it was. So, like, he is fighting at a really high level. Also, by the way, you know, while I'm in the middle of tooting my own horns, while this wasn't one of my recommended plays, I did encourage you to go to the sportsgamblingpodcast.com and check out the article on the best props, which had Hanato Moicano winning by submission at plus 330. So you could have, you know, tailed along on that one and done pretty well. I mean, he looks so good, right? Like, his striking went toe-to-toe with Alexander Hernandez, who is a pretty damn good striker. And in addition to that, like, he wrestles way better than people give him credit for. And I think people write him off because of all those losses. But, you know, like I said on the show on Wednesday, like, Jose Aldo is not a bad loss, nor is Chan Sung Jung. And people forget this dude beat Calvin Kattar in a striking match only. He didn't even try to wrestle Calvin Kattar and beat him. So, like, man, I know the loss to Fiziev slows the momentum down a little bit, but this is a guy who, man, he should be in there with some top lightweights soon. You know, like some really good lightweights.
Yeah, he'll be 33 fairly soon, so there's still some time left on his career to see what we can get out of him. But yeah, fantastic performance for him last night. And Alexander Hernandez, for the seventh straight fight, swapped wins and losses, so he kept his streak alive. With a loss, I don't think he can be called the great any longer. I guess maybe that's why he's going by the great ape now.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's not the great, he's the great ape.
yes. And then another amazing performance was the next man that we hit. Sorry, we had Moicano at minus, what did we have him at? It wasn't a fantastic number.
Minus
180. Yep. Then we have Bobby Green, King Bobby Green. Even though I stole the nickname, I'm still going to allow the two kings last night to remain kings as well. King Bobby Green, minus 150. Decision victory That should have been one of my props. Green via decision, because that's how he wins normally. But Dan had this as one of his recommended plays as well. He skunked Nazrat Haqparast and did it with style, as only Bobby Green can. 30-27, 30-27. What can we say about Bobby Green? Another late career resurgence guy. Looking great doing it. I wish he'd have some finishing ability, which he doesn't seem to have. But other than that, you can't complain about the defense or that jab of his.
Yeah, well, first of all, he does have finishing ability. He had a first-round finish last time out, which is worth noting. Yeah, it was against granted, it was against an old and unmotivated Ally Akita. But, like, you know, he fought the type of fight he needs to fight against a guy like Nazrat Haqparast. He did a great job doing it. It's sort of funny to me, if you, like, we're following along with the event on Twitter. It really seemed like people were way higher on Bobby Green after this night than they were on Hanato Moicano. Like, I saw, like, calls for, like, Bobby Green to fight, like, Matrus Gamro and people like that. And, like, I didn't see anything like that for Moicano, which is crazy to me because, don't get me wrong, they both won and they both looked good winning. But Bobby Green, like, pumped a bunch of jabs and beat a guy who, you know, is, I don't know, maybe he's better than Alexander Hernandez, but they're right around that. Like, you could fight Nazrat and Hernandez next weekend. Nobody would judge that. But, like, one pumped a bunch of jabs, and the other guy, like, put the screws to him and picked up a rear naked choke. One guy is, you know, 3-1 in his last four. One guy's 2-2 in his last four. Like, it was weird to me to see everybody higher on Bobby Green. I don't know if it's just because of the way he hypes up the crowd or the way he jaws, but, like, man, Moicano, to me, was a much bigger winner on the night.
Yeah, Moicano would have he would take care of Bobby Green if they fought, that's for sure. So, but that's why you shouldn't hang out on Twitter, basically, Dan. You should hang out in the SGPN Slack instead.
I checked that out, too, but the problem is that one moves too fast.
It does.
When I'm old and I wake up in the morning and I can't go back and respond to something somebody said in the middle of the night before.
12 hours ago, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, but it would look stupid.
It does move fast in the SGPN Slack. But, yeah, we hit that one. Bobby Green, don't want to take anything away from his performance because he was fantastic. So that ended the main card, prelim main event. We hit this one right. Andre Arlovsky, split decision over Jared Bandera. 29-28, 28-29, 29-28. I don't know. Is there much to say? -155 Arlovsky. We both had Arlovsky as a prop bet winning via decision, +135. That was a pretty easy pick if you thought Arlovsky was going to win. I don't know. Is there anything to say about this fight? It pretty much went the way we expected it. Bandera's probably not UFC caliber, and Arlovsky keeps doing what Arlovsky does late career.
5-1 in his last six. I think we could lump this one into the Courtney Casey split decision win over Roxanne Modafferi. I'm pretty sure we got Casey O'Neill at negative, I think it was -400 when we picked her, which isn't a super pretty number. But, like, can we talk about these two together with the trash scorecards, which one judge gave it to Jared Bandera and one judge gave it to Roxanne Modafferi, and it just happened to be the same guy in both of them. Insane scorecards. Those scorecards are absolutely insane.
Bandera way more defensible, though, than the Modafferi one.
Yeah, I think so, too. But ultimately, here's the thing. I think that guy judging that fight does not understand that moving forward does not mean you're winning. Because that's the determining factor there, right? Roxy moved forward, Jared moved forward, and, like, neither of them won any round. Like, Roxy got outboxed worse than anyone in women's flyweight history. Literally, like, the numbers show that. And granted, she did do some damage to Casey O'Neill, but, like, it was clear which one was winning both of those fights. So for that judge to mess both of those up, just – absolutely brutal. But I'm glad we got them both right. When they read Jared Bandera on one scorecard, I was a little bit mad because that Arlovsky decision prop seemed so juicy at +135.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Yeah. No, that fight was a lot closer than the other one that we were going to speak of now. Casey O'Neill quickly become one of my favorite fighters. And I was thinking women's flyweight is one of my favorite divisions, maybe my favorite division, but it's up there for sure.
Yeah, it's probably only behind, like, Bantamweight, which we'll talk about at nauseam pretty soon, because they had some crazy fights on this card. But, yeah, like, women's – that's a wicked fun one for me, too.
Yeah, and any – you said wicked fun. You're betraying your roots, Dan.
It comes out once in a while.
It – yeah, any division with Macy Barber in it, we got to be pretty high on. So, right, Dan?
Yeah, I hate Macy Barber.
Women's flyweight, Casey O'Neill, split decision, 29-28 over Roxanne Modafferi. Modafferi was there to bang, bro, just bleed, and that's what she did. Any takeaways from this fight? We had minus 400 O'Neill.
Not. Exactly what I said. Terrible judging.
Exactly. Yeah, Roxy's too tough to finish. And even though I'll talk about recommended plays later, but I got a little too fancy with my recommended plays. So I'm going to have to tone it down, I think, in the next few weeks. Anyhow, Kyla Phillips also looked very good. Like, I was hoping his last fight was just his quote-unquote prospect loss, and it appears like it was based on the last night's performance. Bantamweight fight, he submitted Marcelo Rojo with a triangle armbar, as they're calling it on Wikipedia, round 3, minute 48, and he looked very good in the process against a very game opponent. We only got minus 400 for him, though, on that one also.
Yeah, fun fight, you know, good back and forth. Marcelo looked like he could hold his own on the feet, which was kind of interesting, because I didn't think he was as good of a striker as Kyler Phillips, but yeah, once he started mixing that ground game stuff in, it was all over.
What's the ceiling on Kyler Phillips? Young fellow, top 15 now, you would say for sure, right? If he wasn't already, I don't think he was.
I don't know. He's coming off a loss to Haleon Paiva, who I mean, like, that really drags your stock down in a division where, I mean, it's pretty tough to crack those bantamweight rankings. So even having one, like, bad loss to an unranked opponent is probably enough to keep him from being ranked. I don't think I'm going to put him in there. I mean, like, if you look at the current rankings, you know, like, because it's a composite, so it's not as simple as just taking the guy out who's number 15. Is he better than Rafael Assuncao? For sure. I have him ranked ahead of Rafael Assuncao. I also don't have Assuncao in my rankings. You know, like, I have, I believe I have Adrian Yanez 15 instead. And would you put him ahead of Adrian Yanez? I don't think I would. You know, Adrian Yanez is looking. I think I leave Adrian Yanez in there for me when I have to update these later today, but I think I'd rather just keep Adrian Yanez in there. So do you think he's got a high ceiling? I think he does because he's young. He's only 26, but my big concern for him is a lot of wasted movement in a division that's got guys like, you know, not that I'm saying Ronnie Lawrence is like a future title challenger right now, but like when you have guys at the beginning of the division who are only 2-0 in wrestle like Ronnie Lawrence does, having a lot of wasted motion and doing things that will tire you out, not smart. You know, not smart and not going to play well at bantamweight. You know, like you put him against a guy who has a style like Merab Dvalishvili, who's got a great gas tank, and all of your wasted movement is just going to burn you out and not really get anything done. I think he's just got to tone it back. If he tones back that flashiness, I think the ceiling's a lot higher.
Yep, he is only 26 years old, fighting out of a very good fight camp in MMA lab with John Crouch. So you got to think, you got to like the future prospects of Mr. Kyler Phillips, despite the fact he was on the Top Turtle podcast, but that wore off because he fought someone who was on more recently in Marcelo Rojo.
There's a bunch of guys on this card who have been on too, by the way.
It's true. Even the headliner, Izzy was on in the olden days, was he not?
Ann Whitaker.
And, well, it's, there They're you
both
go.
Of them.
That's right.
Yep.
There you go.
And Moicano and Arlovsky and Vandera and Roxanne Modafferi, both Phillips and Rojo. Jacob Malkin, who we'll talk about being an absolute animal in a second.
Yeah. Don't let King Casey O'Neill on, despite how much I love her, because she's got a mouth of a sailor, Dan, Sandy, on live TV.
Don't put her on. She channeled her inner ally Akinza by telling the crowd to not to boo her.
Exactly. It's true. They shouldn't have booed her. They shouldn't boo our girl, King Casey. Anyhow, next fight was a fight. Carlos Ullberg won unanimous decision, 30-27, 30-27, 30-27 in his light heavyweight belt against Fabio Chiarot. Went the way we expected. His kickboxing is far too good for Chiarot. Chiarot looked a lot better physically and style-wise, plus he fights out of a good camp now, Henry Hoof's camp in Florida, but I don't know if he's UFC caliber at this point. Ullberg minus 240. Kind of frustrating because Ullberg didn't really put his foot in the gas. Would like to see more killer instinct out of him, but a win's a win.
Yeah, well, why though, right? Like, why turn it into that kind of fight when you're clearly piecing him up from the outside? And like, Henry Hooft was like, and this is one of those things where I tell people, you know, when you see a fighter change fight camps, you can't always be like, oh, well, expect huge improvements, but sometimes you get guys like Fabio Chiarot who wind up at Henry Hooft's doorstep, and Henry Hoof is telling him to go for it and that you got to push forward, and he continues to not push forward. So, you know, it doesn't always work out, and in this case, it definitely didn't work out. So I think this is probably the last we see of Chiarot until he picks up some regional level wins or something, because that's three in a row in a not a good-looking third one.
And it's easy to say push forward when you're not the person getting jabbed in the face.
Correct. So,
which I'm sure the coaches realize as well. To finish off my hot run here, bantamweight Ronnie Lawrence, unanimous decision over Leo Mana Martinez, but we're close to him. We can call him Mana. He was on Dan's podcast. 29-27, 29-27, 29-28. This went exactly how we predicted. Lawrence minus 300. His relentless pace and grappling got the job done, but a late surge by Mana Martinez in the last round got him at least some respect back and got him a round, but this was a clear Ronnie Lawrence win, and onwards and upwards for him in bantamweight. A very stacked division, so it's going to be a while before he's really making noise, but a very promising start to his career.
Yeah, I was really impressed with Mana Martinez storming back. You know, you just said it's so hard to just go forward when your coach says go forward, and
yep,
when you're getting jabbed in the face or when you're getting beat. He did it, and it almost won him this fight. Like, he almost not only knocked out Ronnie Lawrence, he almost triangled Ronnie Lawrence. Like, what a great fight. I'm really shocked that this didn't win fight of the night. I'm really shocked. I thought it was a good fight, bonus.
Yep.
And it winds up being a different bantamweight fight, which we'll talk about momentarily. But, you know, you said it exactly right. Ronnie Lawrence, onwards and upwards, got a little work to do, a little bit with the striking, and pick up a few more wins before we see him against some of those top names.
Yes, but anyhow, you can't complain about that performance. Neither can you complain about the next performance. I can complain about it because I got it wrong. Middleweight Jacob Malkoon, another one of these relentless pace, nonstop cardio guys. Beat AJ Dobson, my pick, 29-28, 29-28, 29-28. First round went the way I was hoping and expected. Dobson looked very good in the first round, but then that was the end for him. He got totally outworked. Drug into deep water. Dragged into deep water. Which one should it be, Dan?
Whatever you
what
want.
What happened to him?
Yeah,
he got like, pulled. That's the word. Pulled into deep water.
I think
by Malkoon.
I think Malkoon.
Plus 100.
Yeah, I think Malkoon figured out, first of all the entries to the takedowns he needed, because he gets one right at the end of the first round, and it almost looks like a light bulb went off in his head where he was like, oh yeah, right there. There it is. This fight's over. And it was like his grappling's so good. And I said that on the previous show, like, you know, Dobson is more physically gifted than Jacob Malkoon. He's very strong. He's got a great frame. He clearly puts a lot of work into his cardio, into his strength and conditioning. But Malkoon is just technically better in the terms of wrestling. Impressive win for him. I think so many people just wrote him off as like Whitaker's buddy who only got a contract because he's Whitaker's buddy. When he lost in 16 seconds to Phil Hawes or 18 seconds to Phil Hawes. But he has turned in two amazing grappling performances since then. So, you know, props to him. I'm so excited for what's next for that dude, because that's an awesome win.
Yeah, no, he very clearly deserves to be in the UFC. It wasn't just a favor, at least at this point. So Dan hit that one. I got that one wrong. I also got the next one wrong, as did Dan. Sergey Morozov, minus 225. This was a big one that we whiffed on. But Diego Silva on D'Andrade, first of all, his streak is over. His win-loss streak, six-fight streak is over. He won back-to-back fights. he's not washed after all, like we were thinking he was. He took it to Sergey Morozov and won his bantamweight fight via technical submission. We had back-to-back technical submissions, rear naked chokes, which was another rarity. Round two, 324. I guess he is not washed after all, like I said.
He looked washed in the first round.
Yeah,
I had 10-8 Morozov in the first.
He got lit up and was bleeding all over the place. That's right.
Yeah, so, you know, it seemed like one of those losses for Morozov where he's going to learn a lot about, like, what he can and can't do. And, like, he tagged him on the feet and then he joined him on the ground. And I think in retrospect, if he could go back and force that fight back standing, he'd be a lot happier with it. So, yeah, maybe he learns a little bit about himself here. But, yeah, Douglas Silva de Andrade still proving me wrong at, you know, whatever his advanced age is now, which is ridiculous for bantamweight.
Yeah, he is 37, I think I saw. 36. He'll be 37 in June. On my anniversary, oh, my gosh, June 22nd, he will be turning 37. So, yeah, he can't complain about, well, he got, like I said, he was bleeding like Ric Flair back in the day. But other than that, he's got a dog in him, Dan, a lot of dog in him.
He sure does.
All right. So we whiffed on that. How do we do on our next fight here? Let me see. I got this one right. Dan got it wrong. Ha, ha, ha. Jeremiah Wells, minus 240. Technical submission, rear naked choke, round one, 438 over Mike Mathitha. I don't know if he deserves the Blood Diamond nickname now. You can't be in the UFC at 3-0 and be one-dimensional, which he was. He could not handle the grappling, even though Jeremiah Wells did some weird thing to start the fight. Did he explain what he was doing? He started sprinting around the perimeter of the cage.
Yeah, I never got a good reason.
Tripped. Maybe that was all the plan all along to get Blood Diamond. Mathitha is his name now, to get him to take the bait and close the distance. But anyhow, no, his grappling was too much.
Yeah, and I'm not sure I'm ready to, you know, I saw people piling it on, saying Blood Diamond doesn't belong in the UFC. And
you can't tell yet.
I don't think you can tell yet, because it's also worth noting how long it took Jeremiah Wells to get Blood Diamond to the mat. Right, like, because it wasn't the first takedown attempt. He failed a couple of times to get Blood Diamond down, which, like, Jeremiah Wells is a pretty good wrestler. So for Blood Diamond to stuff him a couple of times and to, like, work in the clinch with him really well, I think that's worth noting. And also, it wasn't like as soon as he was on the ground, Jeremiah Wells was, like, in an arm triangle choke and just finished him or in a rear naked. Like, he avoided a couple of, like, submission attempts, and he defended a rear naked choke, and he moved to the side, and he defended that arm triangle choke, and he went back to his mat. And, like, yeah, what did he wind up getting submitted? For sure, yeah. And it was, you know, not ideal, and he gave up his neck as he tried to stand up, which is, you know, something that you learn not to do. And should he have been signed at 3-0? No, probably not. Like, nobody really should be signed at that early of age. But for everybody out there who's saying, like, this dude clearly isn't going to beat anybody at welterweight in the UFC, I'm not so sure that's true. I don't know necessarily that I'm ready to write him off. I need to see more of him, but I think the same way people wrote Jacob Malkin off, I think people are writing Blood Diamond off, and I don't know that that's right.
Yeah, it all depends on his next matchup. So if they give him another striker, then we will see how he does with UFC caliber talent. I forgot to mention that we did lose a fight. Flyweight battle, Alex Perez came in overweight at 128. Matt Schnell refused to take the fight, which is kind of rich, because doesn't Matt Schnell miss weight a lot on fights also?
He didn't miss weight last time. He made it, but the commission wouldn't let him fight.
Okay, but I thought he
had... That one's been canceled four times now, though.
That's right. So. No, I'm sorry. He hasn't missed weight before. I shouldn't be dragging his name in the mud like that. He failed a drug test, though, his last fight. But anyhow, we lost that fight. The opener was not originally the opener, but then William Knight came in 12 pounds overweight, the biggest weight miss in UFC history. He was my hero because he still had abs still at the weigh-in, despite being 12 pounds overweight. He did not have abs last night at the fight, though. He just looked very big, and we lost our underdog plus 142 because Maxim Grisham very clearly won 30-27. Knight did nothing in the fight. So I don't know what to – this guy is just going to continue to confound us, I think, Dan.
Yeah, I'm going to get every pick about William Knight wrong. He's yeah. now my light heavyweight slash heavyweight Michael Johnson, because I got so many Michael Johnson picks wrong in my day.
He's like he's Canadian. But he's not Canadian.
It's almost like he's Canadian.
I don't think there's any takeaways from this fight. Are there any takeaways, Dan?
I don't think so.
No.
No, not at all.
So, but we didn't start things off so hot. I started off, Dan lost the first three fights of the night, which I'm sure was making you sweat things. I only hit one of the first four fights, so as did Dan. So things did not start out too well, but they ended up fairly nicely. If you look at our hit percentage, 9-5, we both were. However, I didn't hit any underdogs. I hit a lot of minus 400s, which doesn't help the bankroll. Dan hit one, even money one. So we were both 9-5. I was down $112. Dan was down $54. On the year, I am hitting 65% of my picks, which is pretty wild, but I am down $65. Dan is hitting 56% of his picks, down $644, Dan. But on to the recommended plays, right?
That's Dan, what I was going to ask about next.
There you go. Here we go.
You saw that coming.
Dan had $30. Our loss, 116 episodes in, I know what's coming next. $30. He had Arlovski winning via decision plus 135. He lost 35 on William Knight. Would you have, after the weigh-ins,
I would have pulled that 100%. Yeah, you look like hell.
Because when a guy misses weight that great usually means there's an injury. I haven't heard if there is one. He was blaming on short notice, but usually...
Well, he was short notice, and he said he had been sick prior and had ballooned up to almost 250.
Okay.
He was like 250 when he got note that this fight was going to happen. So, not necessarily blaming it on an injury, but blaming it on like an illness and not clearly not being prepared and being short noticed here.
Okay, I'll reword it. Usually it's a health issue if a guy or gal misses weight that great. I probably would have backed off also. I'm just picking him to win the fight. But anyhow, Dan missed that one. We make our picks, what, on Wednesday night? So we can't wait till weigh-ins. See, people, you degens need these picks in your ears as soon as you can get them. And then he hit $35. I want to call him Danny Green, but that's an NBA player. Bobby Green. -150 with the Batman Bigelow head tattoos. So Dan went 2-1, up $28.83 on the night. That was his return on his $100. As for myself, $40 I had on Arlovski winning via decision plus 135. And then I got actually all my picks were probably a little too fancy. I had $20 on Casey O'Neill at plus 400 to win via KO TKO, but Modafari was just too tough for that, and the fight I was picturing it possibly a ground and pound in that fight never made it to the mat. $20 I had on Brunson winning outright. That didn't happen. Then I had $20 in Derek Lewis winning via TKO slash KO minus 135. So I missed on three of them. Like I said, I'm getting too fancy. I'm not a prop better IRL in real life. So maybe I should stop making so many prop recommended plays. But regardless, I won big on the Arlovski one, so that helped me. I ended up down $6 going 1-for-3, so could have been a lot worse. So overall, on the year, I'm 6-6, which I'm not happy about, but I'm up $44, 12% return on investment, so that I'm happy about. Dan, 8-4, 67%, up $117, 29% return on investment.
That's the number I want to hear.
That's what he wants to hear. That's maybe get yourself another car to put in that garage of yours. You're gonna tell me you have an automatic door opener too, right?
Two of them.
Oh my gosh! Listen to this guy. Living large in the woods. All right. Before we wrap it up, let me tell you about Prop Swap. We're brought to you by Prop Swap, where America buys and sells sports bets. The only thing more exciting than watching the NFL playoffs is prop swapping the NFL playoffs. January is ProSwap's biggest month ever as bettors from across the country cash in on the Super Bowl futures. Like Joe from California, who sold a $100 40-1 Bengals Super Bowl ticket for $1,500. So the buyer got great odds and Joe made 15 times as money. Do you think that was a smart move, Dan, or would you hang on to the Bengals pick?
Ooh, I think I'd hold on to the Bengals. I'm going Bengals today.
So you would hang on for the $4,000
payoff? Yeah, I'm going with the Bengals. Yeah.
All right. You've heard it. Prosoft has thousands of buyers across country, so you always find the best odds and collect the most money from your bets. Hurry and download the free PropSwap app today. PropSwap has fantastic features like filtering listed tickets based on the best value, a free activity feed to stay in the know with all the big sales, and red-hot tickets for sale, a loyalty rewards program that turns your ticket sales into extra bonus cash, and a first deposit cash match. Use promo code SGP on your first deposit, and PropSwap will match your deposit up to $500. Join the real sports bettors on PropSwap, where America buys and sells sports bets. Since you're going to get this in your ears right before tip-off of the big American Grey Cup, make sure you get into the SGPN's app, download our app, so you can win $100,000 out of Dan's pocket in the Super Bowl prop contest. If you go 10-0 on the Super Bowl props that we have posted in the app there, you win $100,000. The SGPN app is now live in the App Store and Google Play. The app gives you easy access to all our picks, podcasts, all of that stuff. So don't forget to toss us an app review also and download the SGPN app today. All right, UFC 271 in the books. We're on again, of course. UFC is running straight through to the end of March, which is good for the content mill that we're running here. We've got a newly renamed UFC Fight Night Walker versus Hill. It was originally UFC Fight Night Dos Anjos versus Fiziev, but as Dan alluded to earlier, Fiziev is having visa issues, so that fight got moved, postponed to UFC 272. So this will be the 19th of February, which would be next Saturday night from the UFC Apex in Enterprise, Nevada. Main event, Johnny Walker versus Jamahal Hill. You can call him Jamahal Hill. I call him Jamahal. That is our main event. Is this really our co-main event? A catchweight, 195-pound fight between Kyle Daukaus and Jamie Pickett? Really?
It was originally the third to the top, so I don't know if they will leave that in the co-main event, because if you look at if you look at typical fight cards, one and two are usually good, and like the third to the top is usually a little less good. Obviously, this pay-per-view card was a little bit different, but like, I don't know. This one screams to me that like Jim Miller, Nicholas Mota should be co-main event, or Joaquin Buckley versus Abdul Razak Hassan would be a good second one. There's not a lot of name value on this card though, so I mean, maybe Kyle Daukaus is it.
I guess originally we would have had a heavyweight bout between Ilir Latifi and Alexander Romanov would have been the co-main event, but Romanov pulled out of that. So, all right, other than the fights that I mentioned and Dan have mentioned, we also have Parker Porter versus Alan Boud. How do you say his name again, Dan?
Bado.
Jim Miller versus
French.
Jim Miller versus Nicholas Mota. This was originally scheduled, right? A while ago.
Yep.
And then
long time.
Then,
yep.
Yep. He mentioned Buckley already. Mario Bautista versus Khalid Taha. Gabriel Benitez. Mowgli versus David Onama. Jessica Rose Clark versus Stephanie Egger. Chaz Skelly versus Mark Striegel. Diana Balbicha versus Gloria DePaula. Chad Onhilliger, he's a Canadian, right? I believe.
Yes, he is.
From
he
the
is
Contender Series versus, how do you say his name again? Is Onhilliger? Is that how you say it?
Onhilliger.
Onhilliger, really? I'm saying it too fancy, aren't I? He's fighting Jesse Strader, and that is it. We have Jonathan JSP Pierce. He's supposed to fight too against Austin Lingo, but Lingo pulled out. So
they have a replacement for that one already as well. That one is they've got a guy. Let me see if I can remember correctly. He was on Contender Series. Christian Rodriguez was on Contender Series out of Rufus Sport. He beat Junior Cortez. They did not sign him. He took one fight outside of the UFC, and they have now signed him to fight Jonathan Pierce.
So that would give us 12 fights. Nothing to write home about, as we said.
No, and especially it might be back down to 11 too, because there's rumors that Khalid Taha is not going to be able to make it to fight night.
No, not Khalid.
So I mean, more
say it ain't so.
That one's more of a bummer for me because I really wanted to watch Mario Bautista. That guy's absolutely exciting to watch. So hopefully they find a bantamweight replacement for him.
He is absolutely exciting to watch. All right, anything jump off the page, off the screen, the virtual page at you? Any fight you're like, you're a hardcore, you're a degen, you're a nerd in grappling and other realms. Anything jump off the screen like, okay, I can't wait to see that fight?
David Onama. David Onama is unabashedly the one who I'm most excited to see. The dude took a fight on a 15-day turnaround, short notice, was on vacation when he got the notice for the fight, and fought Mason Jones. I don't know if you guys remember this. He fought Mason Jones on 15 days from his prior fight and, like, on 7 days notice or something like that, and held his own up a weight class against freaking Mason Jones, who's, you know, a really tough opponent, threw some absolute bombs, seemed to have Mason Jones hurt at times. Like, this guy is such a fun boxer to see him with a full training camp with his man, James Krause backed down in his regular weight division. Man, I think we're going to see something really special out of him.
So it kind of tells you what type of fight card we have coming up that Dan's most excited to see a guy who's 0-1 in the UFC.
Right? I mean, are you excited to see Johnny Walker do Johnny Walker things again?
Yeah, actually, he's fine. So who knows? But I think he's getting the fun trained out of him, right? Over at SGP, SGPN. No, that's us. SPG, SBG.
He seems to be less fun now. Yes, correct.
Yes, which is not good. And then I'm going to keep saying Jamahal, which isn't fun for anyone. So we'll have fun breaking down regardless, right?
That's right.
We always. Dude, it's the banter. People come for the banter, I've been told, so we're bantering back and forth. Any other news we should mention? Anything else we need to talk about before we put this thing to bed? What do you think?
Is the train chugging
down the line, or have we hit the station?
I think we're all good. We've got a whole Wednesday where you guys can get a whole lot more, so make sure to tune in then.
Oh, boy. Listen to that. In the meantime, Twitter, Jeff Fox, writer. He is Gumby Vreeland. The SGPN Slack is always jumping, so jump in there. Even if you just want to talk about food or movies, we have channels for all of that stuff. It's fun, and it's a really great community. There are no real assholes in it other than me. So if you can stomach me, then the Slack is the place to be for you. And read our stuff, sportsgamblingpodcast.com. Dan does a lot of NBA writing on top of the MMA stuff that he and I cover. He went 2-1 on your MMA props. I called him in to duty yesterday to write some props, and you hit 2 out of 3, right?
I was very close to 3 out of 3 too. I had over 1.5 steals on Steph Curry, and he had 1 of the 2 steals he needed. But yeah, Klay Thompson with a big points day. I had the over there, and Kevon Looney with rebounds.
Yeah, the Curry one was probably the one that was a little most difficult one that you had. So and you almost nailed it regardless. So point being, you can read all our stuff there, or if you want to read MMA only stuff, I got a whole site dedicated to it, MMA-manifesto.com. And that is all. Oh, and listen to Dan's podcast, but they probably won't be out before the next episode. But Prelim Primer and Top Turtle MMA podcast. All right, until Wednesday, I will remain King Jeff Fox. He will remain Gumby Vreeland, and we'll get in your ear holes then. Bye.